Thank you very much, and good morning, everyone. As mentioned, the title of the presentation this morning is Using Cord Bale Samples to Assess Alfalfa Nutrient Needs, both the possibilities and the limits of this process. And I'd like to recognize the co-authors of the paper, Dan Putnam. He's an extension alfalfa specialist at UC Davis, and Rob Wilson, who is a farm advisor over in Susanville area of Northern California. The retail price of $11.52 monoammonium phosphate, that's the primary fertilizer that's used in alfalfa production in California, has changed dramatically over the last few years. It hovered around between say $300 and $500 per metric ton for quite a long time period, and then everyone remembers a couple years ago the price spiked in December of 07, went up to $800, and then August of 08 was about the peak of fertilizer prices, and it was approximately $1,500 a metric ton, and then more recently the price has gone back down to before that spike level in October of 09, the price now is just a little bit over $400 a metric ton. So this creates a considerable incentive for an alfalfa grower to minimize their fertilizer applications because it's a major input cost. And just recently the price has gone down, but unfortunately our alfalfa prices have gone down as well, and they've gone down over $100 a ton just in this last year. So to diagnose the nutrient status of alfalfa fields, the primary techniques that are used by growers is a visual observation, looking for nutrient deficiency symptoms on the plants, soil testing, plant tissue testing, and then also utilizing fertilizer strips where areas of the field are fertilized and other areas are not, and observing the difference in yield. The major nutrient deficiency symptoms that we can have in California, the primary one is phosphorus, and I don't have a picture of that because the plants just look like moisture-stressed plants, and there's not really a definitive nutrient symptom. This is boron deficiency, which we can have in some areas, sulfur deficiency, potassium deficiency, and molybdenum deficiency. These are the different, this is a description of the deficiency symptoms, with nitrogen, just generally yellow-stunted plants, phosphorus, the plants are stunted, and sometimes the leaves are a darker bluish-green, basically looks like moisture stress, potassium, real diagnostic symptoms, pinhead-sized yellow or white spots, and then when the plants are more mature, the leaves will turn yellow with brown leaf tips and edges. Sulfur, generally yellow-stunted plants, and molybdenum, also generally yellow-stunted plants. The reasons that we don't like using nutrient deficiency symptoms to diagnose a deficiency is they're threefold. First off, there's three nutrients that have identical symptoms, just basically general yellow-stunted plants. Another issue is that by the time the deficiency symptoms show up, the grower is already suffering significant yield loss. So soil testing is another method that's used sometimes to diagnose nutrient deficiency in alfalfa fields, and we develop different values to interpret those soil tests. It's considered deficient for phosphorus if the level is less than 5 parts per million, marginal between 5 and 10, adequate between 10 and 20, and high over 20 parts per million. Deficit, the growers are pretty much assured of a yield increase. Marginal is somewhat questionable. Adequate, growers may want to use a maintenance application rate, and high, they don't need to fertilize. And these are the different rates for potassium using ammonium acetate extraction technique, and potassium using sulfuric acid and boron. This is the relative reliability of soil and plant tissue tests. So for phosphorus, we feel that soil testing is good. For potassium, soil testing is also good. For sulfur, it's considered very poor. Boron, poor. It's much more useful for evaluating toxicity of boron than it is for evaluating nutrient deficiency. And molybdenum is not done. In contrast, plant tissue testing is considered to be excellent for diagnosing deficiency for all of these different nutrients. How many growers currently do soil tests? I think it's fairly commonly done for alfalfa growers throughout the West to do a soil test. But as far as plant tissue tests, it's not very widely adopted. This is the traditional UC recommended plant tissue testing technique, and that involves going out to the field when the field is approximately at 1/10 bloom and collecting between 60 and 80 stems from at least 40 plants. And then that plant material that's collected is then fractionated into three different plant parts, the top 1/3, the middle third, and the bottom 1/3. Then the bottom 1/3 portion of the plant is discarded. The middle thirds are let dried, and the leaf portion and the stem portion are separated simply by rubbing the plant material between your hands. And then the top one-third portion is analyzed for boron, molybdenum, and copper. Copper more for animal nutrition than for plant nutrition. The mid-stems for phosphorus and potassium. The leaf portion of the middle stems are used for sulfur determination. And this is a chart that's been developed to establish the critical values for alfalfa at 1/10 bloom. Again, the same ranges, deficient, marginal, adequate, and high for phosphorus, PO4, using the mid-stems, potassium mid-stems, sulfur mid-stems, boron top third, and molybdenum top third, and then deficient, marginal, adequate, and high for each of these different nutrients. So the primary drawbacks of this current system that UC has recommended for, I think, at least 50 years is simply the time that it takes to collect the samples. Most growers, when they're harvesting a field, they just simply don't have the time to run out in the field ahead of the swather and collect forage samples for tissue analysis. It must be taken prior to a cutting. So if the cutting has already occurred and you want to evaluate the nutrient status, it's too late. There's no plant material remaining to take a tissue sample. Fractionating the samples, dividing the samples up into the three parts, and then also separating the leaves from the stems is a somewhat tedious procedure. And unfortunately, most of our growers just don't take the time to do that. And it's also difficult to get a representative sample. You're collecting between 60 and 80 samples to represent the nutrient status of an entire field. So how reliable is that sample? So what we wanted to evaluate then is, could we come up with an alternative tissue testing technique which would involve analyzing cord bale samples? Most of our alfalfa in California is marketed to the dairy industry. What's different between alfalfa in California and the Midwest is alfalfa is primarily grown as a cash crop and sold to the dairy industry. And before it's sold to the dairy industry, that alfalfa is usually cored, and those samples are evaluated for their forage quality. So could we use that same forage quality sample to assess the nutrient status of the field as well? And by using this technique, the time to collect the samples would be minimal. It's a procedure that we're already doing for forage quality analysis. Must be taken prior to a cutting with the old technique. With this technique, as long as you could identify a stack or a load of hay for which cutting it was from and which field, you could still sample that stack. Fractionating samples was laborious. With the core samples, we're not doing any fractionating, so it would be much simpler. And difficult to get a representative sample. With a cord sample, we're sampling numerous bales, at least 20 bales per field, and it's representing a lot more stems than our 60 to 80 that we would use in our old technique. So to assess this procedure, we sampled three areas or replications of 39 different alfalfa fields in both Siskiyou and Modoc counties in Northern California in the years 2007 and 2008. And this shows our typical alfalfa production area. High elevation area between 800 meters and 1300 meters, and we typically get between 3 and 4 cuttings of alfalfa per year. Looks like any Midwestern town, I would. This is what we would do just prior to cutting. We sampled the area that would become the next swath as the swather is coming through the field. And from that sample, we divided the sample in half. One sample was the whole plant part, and the other sample would be fractionated into the three different components that I mentioned previously. Then we came back right after the baling operation was done and before the bales were removed from the field, and we sampled each one of the bales from that windrow. And we also came along and took soil samples, 15 to 20 cores, along that same area. So that by doing this, we could compare the results from the fractionated tops using those three different components that I talked about, the whole tops, cored bale samples, and soil samples as well. So this is the average of a total of 117 samples collected over 2 years in the two counties. From our soil samples, the average pH over all those sites was 7.2, but here's the range down here. It ranged from 5.6 to 8.1. Our average Olson P was 17.1, so you can see there that fits on average. We're right in that adequate category, but you can see there's a huge range all the way from 2 parts per million, which is extremely deficient, to 74.7, which is well above our high level. Then for potassium, average was 192 parts per million, which is actually in the high category, but it ranged from a low of 25 parts per million, extremely deficient, to 632, which is over five times the high level. As you point out, this is not a reflection of fertilization practices. Most of our soils are just inherently high in potassium, and we don't need potassium fertilizer. And the results from the plant tissue analysis were fairly similar. The average was 1327 parts per million PO4P, which falls right in the adequate range. But here again, we had a range from 230 extremely deficient to 2,220. For potassium, it ranged from 2.03. Potassium again was in the high level and on average, but here it ranged from 0.74 from a marginal value to a high value of 4.81. Then for our sulfur analysis, the average was 2,390, so our average was over two times what's considered to be the high level. And this is one of the major nutrients that growers are applying to alfalfa in the Intermountain area. But here again, you can see the range was significant, all the way from 180, extremely deficient, to 5,350, over five times the high level. So very broad range in nutrient levels across the different alfalfa fields. This is the relationship that we found between mid-stem PO4P, the current traditional UC tissue testing technique, and the one that we were investigating, which is Bale Total P. So you can see a fairly good relationship, especially here at the lower values, a little bit of spread out here at, you know, at the very high values, and an R-squared value of 0.88. So a very good relationship. This shows a relationship between whole plant versus bale phosphorus. One of the things that we were worried about is if we're sampling the bales, could there be a significant amount of leaf loss in the baling operation that would bias our results? And you can see that didn't occur. The bales do appear to be fairly representative, and we're not losing a lot of leaves that are affecting the nutrient content. Our R-squared value between whole plant P and bale P was 0.95. And then if you draw a line for a one-to-one relationship to see if there was a bias either way, you can see our line is falling very close to that one-to-one relationship. This is the same type of analysis done for the bale versus the mid-stem potassium concentration. So here again, a fairly good relationship and an R-squared value of 0.83. And again, looking at the relationship between bale K and whole plant K, here again, it's nearly a one-to-one relationship, so we're not getting a bias based on our sampling technique. The mid-stem sulfate sulfur versus bale total sulfur, not quite as good a relationship as we saw with phosphorus and potassium, but still a fairly good relationship with an R-squared value of 0.73. We also wanted to look at how the phosphorus concentration in the plants varies with time. As I mentioned, the values that we've come up with are based on alfalfa at 10% bloom, but selling alfalfa to the dairy industry, most of our alfalfa is no longer harvested at 10% bloom, and it's much more common to harvest in the early bud, mid-bud, or late-bud stage and not let the alfalfa get to 10% bloom. So are these critical values that we established still valid for alfalfa at those early growth stages? So we did two trials, 2006 in Butte Valley, which is 1,300 meter elevation, 2007 in Scott Valley, another Intermountain Valley, at 800 meter elevation. These are the ranges of the fertilizer that we applied, 0 up to 73 kilograms of actual P per hectare. This was whole plant and fractionated plant samples were taken from every plot, starting at early bud, then again at late bud, and then lastly at 10% bloom. And then we determined the forage yield with a Carter forage harvester at the 10% bloom stage. Another trial established the next year in just a different one of the high elevation valleys. As to the results that we had, alfalfa mid-stem phosphorus PO4 concentration changed during the first harvest growth period at our different phosphorus fertilizer rates. So these are the days going across with day zero, the 1st of June, going on through. So these right here represent, that was sampling done at the very early bud stage when you could just feel bud initiation. The middle area here is at mid to late bud, and this is at 10% bloom. So what you see here, this 800 parts per million PO4P, this is considered our critical value for phosphorus. So you can see there's a very large effect of maturity. A sample that we may have taken here at the early bud stage would test adequate over that 800 parts per million, but if that same sample was taken later at the 10% bloom stage, it would be considered to be deficient. So this shows that we need to take into account the maturity of the alfalfa, and our current system does not do that. This is the same type of chart, but this is for our whole plant total P concentration, and you can see that the levels overall do decline also with time, but not to the same degree that the mid-stem phosphate concentration does. So in this case, you can see if we sample here Or if we sampled later, very seldom did it actually change the result of whether it was deficient or not, but we still need to account for that effect of the maturity alfalfa. This is the relationship that we have between yield and whole plant total pea concentration. So on the x-axis is our whole plant total pea, and this is our relative yield. So quadratic r squared for this relationship there is a 0.54, and the different shapes, whether it's a circle, square, or a triangle, represents the cutting. So the problem, while I think our relationship was not stronger than this, is that we're seeing a difference between the cuttings and the relationship between yield and phosphorus concentration. You see most of the third harvests are down here compared to first harvest here on top of the line. This also shows that the same situation is the effect of maturity and cutting on mid-stem PO4P. This is the first cut and the second cut. And here again, the beginning here was very early bud, mid-bud, 10% bloom, and here we took it actually beyond that to 50% bloom. Here was the second cut at early bud, mid-bud, and 10% bloom. So you can see we're getting a higher concentration on second cutting than we are on first cutting. So that might be due to a much higher growth rate on first cutting, diluting the nutrient concentration, and also perhaps increased phosphorus availability during the summer months with warmer soil temperature. But the main take-home point here is that we need to find a way to take into account effect of maturity and also the effect of the cutting for the year. So to conclude then, we see remarkable level of variation in the nutritional status of producers' fields, indicating that there is clearly room for improvement in fertilization practices over what growers are currently doing. The bale sampling for tissue testing appears to be a reliable alternative to fractionated grab samples, like I mentioned, that's too tedious to use. We actually don't know. It's not known which method best reflects the nutritional status of the field. We just know that those two methods are well correlated. Phosphorus concentration declined with advancing maturity, so we need to find a method to take into account the effect of maturity and have different values for different maturity alfalfa. However, the mid-stems were more affected by maturity than were the whole tops. The phosphorus concentration also varied with cutting. Concentration was lower on first cutting than it was on second cutting of alfalfa. So to interpretation of the results of a plant tissue analysis then will require standardizing the data for cutting and for the maturity effect. The current research that we're doing, we're examining maturity and cutting effect for pea, but we're also looking at several other nutrients which can be deficient in California alfalfa, potassium, sulfur, boron, and molybdenum. We're looking at the effect over time for both fractionated plant parts, the whole tops, and the top 6 inches. The top 6 inches of growth is analyzed in many other states. And as difficult it is for someone in California to admit other states might be right, I think that may be the case here. Perhaps that top 6 inches is less affected by maturity than the mid-stem portion. So we'll be taking a look at that and hopefully find out. But overall, we feel that, you know, for a grower to adopt this tissue testing technology, the core bale sample is probably the best way to go, which would be equivalent to the whole tops. Thank you.
Can we have the lights, please? Does anybody have a question for Steve?
Did you take any water samples of irrigated alfalfa? Did you take any water samples to see if you were having any contamination from water, salts, anything like that that could have been finding
out some of these nutrients? Yeah, no, we didn't take water samples. There very well could be differences, but you know, we were just looking at correlation between the two different methods of sampling the alfalfa. So not looking at a fertilizer response per se, we were more so looking at the relationship between the two different sampling methods, the cord bales versus plant parts.
I like the direction you're going to see. I think it's really useful. Two questions really, or one comment and a question. I like getting away from fractionating the stem segments. I think that's really complicated. We're even going back, getting away from that joint to the whole shoot. So I think hard before you go to the top 6 inches, because if you think about the top 6 inches in June, that's one
right
developmental area of the plant. In August, it's a different developmental area of the plant, and you're going to end up with calibration curves that just don't necessarily are in sync with each other. But also associated with that is the difficulty in getting producers to just do that and get 6 inches instead of 8 inches or 4 inches. I mean, it just is very inconsistent, and they don't like doing it.
No, I agree. I agree completely, Jeff. That's.
I like the bale idea.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. Can you take take this a step further. Tell me how you got the tissue nutrient concentrations. Was this with ICP or NIRS?
It was an NIRS. That's what we'll be looking at next. Yeah. So we want.
Do with NIRS.
Exactly.
That would be just awesome.
Right.
When we looked at those, they're not very good for PK, but I think it could be improved.
That's what we're afraid of. We have a commercial lab in California that is doing the NIRS now, and they feel that it's fairly reliable. So we'll be testing that next year with that lab and ourselves as well to find out. So that would be real simple because growers are already doing that for their forage quality analysis so they could get all the information they want from one sample. And no, I agree that I really don't want to go the 6-inch method, even though it's hard for me to admit other states might be right. I think that those top 6 inches are probably don't change as much with maturity as what our midstem does. So I think compared to those two, for that portion of the equation, I think it may be better. But overall, I really want to go with the cord bale samples.
I think that's good.
Yeah.
You showed you had a real good correlation between the cord bale sample and then, the more traditional practice.
Uh-huh.
And that kind of argues, and there's all the advantages of simplicity of taking that sample. And then you also mentioned that, the UC guidelines are based on sampling at
right, you're sampling at the time that they harvested, right?
No reason to do that.
Right, but they have to, that's correct, sorry. But they have to be able to know what maturity stage they're harvesting at, and that's we were trying to find something that we could use instead of the, just saying what I might call 10% bloom might be different than what someone else calls 10% bloom, and what I call bud might be different than what you call bud, and it might be late bud. We were trying to see if we could use ADF, and see since that's so well correlated with maturity, but the problem we ran into was the difference between the two cuttings. Our second cutting will have higher ADF, but it'll have higher concentration of the nutrients as well, so we don't think that we can use ADF as a judge of what the maturity is. But we're also looking at plant height and think that may be better correlated than what the ADF value is.
Yeah, but the assumption that growers are more specific in terms of harvest date and not necessarily in terms of tissue sampling date, but you're saying there could be a lot of variability in terms of the growth stage when they're actually harvested.
Right, they know when they harvested it, but what they might call 10% bloom might not be what I call 10% bloom. So if we can develop different charts for different growth stages, they may be looking at the wrong chart if they consider it to be a different growth stage when they harvest. And then when you're looking at the bale, they may not remember exactly what growth stage it was in when they harvested.
Your range and you said the nutrients are done by ICP.
Dan, is that, do you know? I believe so, yeah. Yeah.
I guess on your soil, you had quite a range.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, is there any strategy or thoughts, or ways to restrict your sampling and manage ways?
Well, the range was the range that occurred in grower fields. So we wanted to have a range to see how well we could correlate the different techniques. So we didn't want to have them all with similar values. So we specifically selected fields that we thought might have different nutrient levels.
It's tenfold.
It just shows to me that there's a lot of room for improvement in grower fertilization practices, I think. How many core samples? We sampled between, depending on how many bales there were in that windrow, but it was typically between 15 and 20 bales. And for our forage quality analysis, we recommend at least 20 bales. So if a grower is sampling an entire field, we would say at least 20 bales minimum core sample.
One core sample per
bale. Then it's a composite sample. Right. You don't analyze each bale, but you sample 20 bales to make up your sample. Jeff?
Now, there is one little catch with the bale thing, and that's, it doesn't happen in California ever, at least not in 4 years, with rainfall.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to deal with that? Have you thought that one through? Because if you get rain on it, some of them will reach out.
Right. Right. By a pole barn?
Yeah, pole barn.
No, that's an issue. I think if your hay got rained on, I don't think you could use this technique or sample lower bales that where the rain didn't reach that level. But that is an issue.
I guess I was thinking about my question about the variability in soil. Do you have any thoughts on doing the bale method takes out some of that question about where you're compositing soil, the swath width and length of the cut. So I don't know if there's a way to sample for that bale. You know, now you have an area of land that's composited.
Precision ag for forages right there.
Yeah.
Right.